Are you ready for the sex, girls? The hot, hot, mean, hot, big, hot girls. Are you ready for the sex, girls? The right, right, ultra-vital, nice, nice girls. They play pool in your house, take off their own clothes. They could talk about love, they know where it goes. They are women without any faults. Are you ready for the pony girls? The right, right.
Welcome to Buena Vista Socialist Club. We are here doing a bonus episode, and it's back. It's back to the old team. It's Andrew and Lucy.
Hey, everyone's favorite.
Woo!
I assume.
Probably.
I demand.
Yeah, if you're an old Buena Vista head, you're gonna remember all the little bonus episodes we've done that are just you and me.
Hey, all you Buena heads out there. That's
right.
A thing.
All you big time. We don't really have a name for.
No, we need a cool name.
Other than like friends of the show, the obvious one.
But for the OG.
Yeah, yeah. And how are you feeling, Lucy?
I've got a big fever because I went to the nerd convention and I spoke to too many nerds and now I'm very sick.
You caught the brain fever. You caught anime brain fever.
I did. I'm personally blaming the guy that had a legitimate waifu pillow. He was carrying it with him. It took me a long time to realize that he bought it at the convention. I thought he had just, like, brought it from home.
Well, you always take your wife to the convention.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like that's definitely a kind of like very hard to tell whether or not someone's buying it as a joke or if they're like, hey, I can go to the anime convention and buy one of them and people will think it's a joke.
I was like, you have fun with that.
Yep. Have fun holding that pillow at night.
Good segue into this episode.
Well, we are bringing back a thing that we introduced a long time ago, claiming that we were going to do more, and then we never did.
We didn't.
No, and it's a shame because it has such a good name, and the name for this type of episode is "If It Ain't Woke, Don't Fix It."
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great.
It's a good name.
Great name. So the first one of these we did a long time ago. It was one of our very first bonus episodes. I think. And we reviewed a movie called, one of Lucy's favorite movies in the whole world,
mm-hmm.
called Sorority Boys.
Great film.
Which I believe, how did you describe it, Lucy, at the time? The effect it had on you?
I don't know.
I believe you said it was the movie that made you a feminist.
Oh, wow. I did too.
And then we watched it again and you were like... Wait. But in that film is about some big-time partying college frat bros who get kicked out of their frat. They get framed. They get stitched up, don't they, by some jealous bros.
Yeah.
And so they are forced, shame of shames, to move into a sorority by pretending to be ladies.
Ugly ladies.
Uggos, the worst kind of ladies. The kind of ladies that they themselves despise at the start of the film.
Mm-hmm.
But lo and behold, across the course of the film, there's good stuff and bad stuff, and they learn some lessons at the end.
That's true.
They learn some lessons, like, you know, you shouldn't be mean to women based on their looks. Women actually are allowed to go to university. That's one of the things they learn.
Yeah, ladies have periods.
Mm-hmm. I like the guy that just starts going to like a gender studies class. He's just like, whoa, getting his mind blown.
Crazy.
He has like a woman just speak to him normally and he's like, holy fuck.
She's the one.
I'm so in love. I'm pretty sure we wound up coming away from that with mixed impressions, because the point of this segment is to watch old movies which probably seemed relatively progressive or like they had some sort of positive message at the time and to see if they still hold up.
Mm-hmm.
And so for this iteration of this, we have chosen the film, that classic film, Revenge of the Nerds.
Yep.
Starring some nerds.
Some huge nerds.
It's from 1984. It's got a lot of stuff like Devo on the soundtrack. It's got a pretty good soundtrack.
It's got a good soundtrack.
I'll give it that. A lot of recognizable faces in there, although they are all very young. Has good old Anthony Edwards from ER.
He was looking good in that movie.
He was, wasn't he?
Yeah, I was like, damn,
bit of a snack at the start. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I believe this was like the career-making role for Curtis Armstrong, who played Booger.
Love Curtis Armstrong.
Yep.
Great comedy actor.
Yep. What college movie is it where he's like the campus security guy? Van Wilder.
One of those.
Yes, that is it. So he's hung in there. He's really hung in there and had a nice career for himself. Good on him. And he's good in this too. So, he's also in Old School. He's in Animal House.
Mm-hmm.
He's in a movie called College. He's in all the college partying movies, folks. So, I guess how we want to get into this? Shall we go through the movie kind of as it gets laid out? Because what I was struck by right at the start of the movie was that the nerds who are getting ready to pack up and move to uni and live on campus, they both just seemed like quite nice guys, like actually nice, you know?
Yeah. I think this movie is sort of colored now by the fact that nerds maybe used to be like oppressed and now they're like the hugest pieces of shit. So it's a different lens that you're looking at the movie through.
Yeah. They're getting packed up and they're being very nice and supportive of each other.
They're nice dudes.
Anthony Edwards, who is playing Gilbert, lead nerd Gilbert.
The hot nerd.
Yeah, with his good friend Lewis. They're getting all packed up and ready to go. They're taken to the university by Lewis's very, very supportive father, who is also a massive nerd, who was played by James Cromwell, who you might all remember as the farmer from the movie Babe.
Oh, it was too.
Lots of other things. He was what's his name? The like bad guy boss cop in LA Confidential. All kinds of stuff. While I was watching the movie, I was trying to remember the name of the movie Babe, and all that was coming in my brain was, I was just like, Pig.
Pig movie.
He's in Pig. He was in Pig. He's very nice. He's like telling his son all the right stuff. Like, you're very smart and you're a fundamentally good person and I believe in you and I think you're going to do really well. Which again, I was like, why? These guys are all very self-confident. Which, again, does not gel with my idea of a true nerd.
No, they weren't actually, like, nerdy personalities. They had zero autism.
Yes.
No
yes,
autism.
would you like to know a note I have written down here?
Yes.
Lead nerd is nowhere near autistic enough.
It's true. He was, like, the, like, nerdy, ugly girl in, like, She's All That. It's like, he's clearly hot. What are you doing?
Yep. And as we all know with so many guys, like guys can be like uggos and shit as long as they're like funny and they can have a good conversation and they're relatively self-assured and everything. Like they're still going to get laid. And even from right off the bat in this movie, this dude is just, he's like making moves on girls who are way out of his league and being super chill about it.
Yeah.
And again, I was like, this is not a modern nerd. This is not a modern nerd.
It's a fake nerd. He's a fake gamer guy.
Yeah. So they pull up on campus and they get their comically large trunk off the roof of the car and start carrying it across campus to wherever it is that they're going to be living, causing a lot of good slapstick as they go. People are trying to avoid the big trunk and they're falling over. They're crashing bikes. Everybody's getting all fucked up by this thing and they don't notice any of it, which is classic comedy.
Classic.
And on the way there, they go past the big jock frat house, the dominant jock frat house on campus, the Alpha Beta campus. And they are in the middle of doing some jock stuff. They notice the nerds on the way past, leading biggest, beefiest jock, Ogre. Was his name Ogre?
I think so.
To scream, "Nerds! Nerds!"
Well, anyway, college is a whole new ballgame.
Ogre! Ogre!
People judge you differently than they did in high school.
Ogre! 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 Ogre!
Where are they?
Ogre!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
But yeah, we get some shots of like the frat house. It was just really stressful to me. It was just all dudes like smashing beers and stuff, which is fine. It's not the binge drinking I was bothered by. It was that like everybody was spraying it everywhere.
I know, that really made me anxious. They just like sprayed beer everywhere. I was like, you are college students. You can't afford this. Oh, they were wasting this beer.
They were just casually pouring it over each other's heads.
The dude jumps in the pool and just gets beer everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. They fill a baby pool with like a little inflatable pool with beer. And I'm trying to remember what they called it. They were like something dives or whatever.
Yeah.
And he jumps from like the landing on the stairs into this pool. And again, all I could think about with all this is like the excessive drinking. That's fine. All I could imagine was what that place smells like every morning.
Mm, it's going to get cockroaches.
Ugh.
If you leave an empty beer bottle, you're going to get cockroaches. Mm. I'd learned this the hard way.
It's like, remember when they like banned smoking in all the bars and shit in Australia? And,
I was slightly too young to know what it was like to smoke in a bar.
Oh, there we go. Mm. There we go. Well, it's fucking gross is the answer. It's probably great if you loved like smashing darts the entire time you were in a club or whatever.
Even if you did, it just seems gross.
So gross, man. Like my overwhelming memory of that time in the world was that you would go to a club or a bar or whatever, and people would just be chain smoking inside the whole time.
Jesus.
And you go home and pass out drunk, and you wake up the next morning and like your whole body and all of your hair,
you just feel like shit.
Just thick with smoke, like your hair's all kind of tacky, you know.
Yeah.
And then you would like roll over and smell your own pillow that your head had been resting on with all mm-hmm. the cigarette smoke in it, and it was fucking horrifying. Not to mention like for any poor bastard who worked in one of those joints.
But... oh god, they've all got cancer now.
But yes, in a similar way, I feel like because I do not go out anywhere near as much now. Well, I don't know if it's that, but like any time that you have some reason to go into a pub at like midday, you know, some place that gets pretty loose at night, if you got to go into a place like that at like 11 or 12 or whatever in the morning, and you just smell that smell of extremely stale beer that has been spilled all over the floor every night.
Yeah.
And that's all I can imagine this frat house just stinking like. Stinking like a filthy bar.
Yeah.
And stressed me out. Like you said, made me anxious. As soon as they were doing it, I was just like, guys, who's going to clean this up? Who's going to mop down all the walls in this frat house?
Classic Andrew, thinking about the cleanup.
Well, someone's got to do it. Well, luckily it turned out to not be a problem in this instance because they get themselves some like 120 proof like boat cleaning liquor or whatever, and one of the guys does a fireball and accidentally sets fire to the roof of the frat house, which then burns down. So they need somewhere to live after this, and they are instructed by their coach, a young John Goodman, looking very kind of I would say, did it look like it was kind of just before Roseanne?
Yeah, probably.
Very, very young, prime young looking. John Goodman. He was looking that kind of King Ralph age, if you've ever seen the movie King Ralph.
Great film.
Great film. Classic comedy. Imagine that a big, fat, super American guy was suddenly the king of England.
Classic.
Outrageous. Ridiculous. He's supposed to be the king and he wants to bowl.
Hilarious.
He wants to drink beer and bowl.
Oh, God, it's quirky.
So the jocks, they are directed by their coach to storm a nearby dorm and take it over, which causes them to toss out all the nerds who wind up sleeping in the gymnasium together while they try to find them accommodation. And this is where we start to really get our band of nerds together. It's where we're introduced to all the losers and outcasts all at the same time. Mm. And we get the full gamut. There's some little young Sheldon-looking ass kid with a bow tie who gets marched in by his parents.
Yeah, there's a literal child. There's a child in there, and he gets problematic in that sense.
Yep. He is absolutely like look like he's about 12, 14.
Yeah, 11, 12.
Yep. There's some super like ugly thick glasses, acne struck kind of nerds. There is one who is named Poindexter
Arnold.
Yeah.
Which did cause me to question, is this the origin of the contemporary understanding of a nerd being a Poindexter?
Maybe. I don't know where that word came from.
Like, I wonder if it used to just be a name. And now maybe. It's Who knows? But literally his name. Who else do we get introduced to? Oh, we get introduced to a Japanese guy who, when they say his name, you get the classic gong sound effect.
Yep.
Yep.
This is where it gets unwoke.
Well, yes, the school administrator who is reading off their names bows to him as he says his name, and then they hit the big gong. There's a very camp black kid.
Yeah, I like how they've combined the gay character and the black character into one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very useful.
Although I should say there's more than one gay character in the movie.
There's more than one black character, actually. I've been proven wrong.
So, they kind of run through them all. And I guess at this point, the movie is starting to lay out one of its central ideas, which is that nerds are not just as we consider them nerds, but they're more talking about kind of people who are social outcasts, misfits, people that don't belong, people who get hassled, all that kind of stuff. So in that sense, I kind of wound up thinking at this point, even though we did have some not very woke gong sound effects, I did kind of wind up looking at the crew at this point and going, they're pretty inclusive.
They were very inclusive, actually. The jock house is all white dudes and white girls, and then the nerd house, you got everything in there. I mean, there's one Asian.
Yep. They have their Asian guy. They've got their black queer dude. They've got they've also got like non-smart geeks like Booger.
Mm-hmm.
Booger's just kind of dumb, but he likes to smoke weed and burp and just be gross and shit.
Yeah.
But they're like, whatever. You can be friends too. They're just kind of down with everybody, which is
good for them.
Which is the way to go. So, at this point, they're having trouble finding accommodation for the nerds. And now, here comes that problematic part you were talking about. So they use a big computer/robot that one of them has made to print out some addresses for places nearby that are advertising rentals. And they distribute them to people and say, go out and try to see if you can rent us somewhere to all live. Japanese guy gets sent to another Japanese guy's house, who opens the door and speaks to him in Japanese for a minute, quite rudely, ending on the very clearly enunciated word, nerd.
Nerd!
blasts him with a bunch of Japanese, ending in nerd, slams the door in his face.
Mm-hmm.
The gay kid answers the door to like a 7 foot tall, stain covered redneck guy and says, oh, are you this person? And he goes, yeah, that's me. And he says, just checking, and leaves. I'm assuming because he doesn't want to get beaten to death.
Yeah.
So it's already taken a downward slide. And then in the last one of these scenes, we get 12-year-old kid knocking on a lady's door, who answers it and immediately starts trying to fuck the kid.
Hi there, big boy.
Hi. I came about the room for rent.
It's right next to mine. It'll be perfect for us.
Yeah, she's like straight up trying to fuck a child.
Very middle-aged lady. She's just like, why don't you come in? She's like, she's really laying it on thick.
To a child.
Yeah, she absolutely wants this fucking 12-year-old rail-thin, bowl-cut having glasses-wearing motherfucker to come in and dick her down. And it's not good. It kind of makes you go, whose idea was this? So eventually, they manage to get themselves a house, though. They get themselves a house and they do it all up very nicely. They do a bit of bonding. The booger gets the Japanese guy to smoke some weed and he's into it. He teaches him some American terms for pussy and cheats him out of his money in poker. All the stuff friends do.
Normal.
Yeah, good normal stuff. They finally get it all done up nice. When the jocks see it and become jealous. And so after they're just kind of having fun for the first time, a rock gets hurled through the window.
Says nerds, get out.
And at this point, the movie takes another turn in its themes. It is a rock with nerds get out painted on it.
That's a good prank.
And I thought to myself, so is this meant to be like a, are they trying to hit like a civil rights kind of vibe?
Maybe.
Because they are, yeah, the whole, it's a very kind of like, you know, Martin Luther King getting rocks tossed through his windows in front of his children kind of vibe. So they attempt to have themselves accepted as a fraternity. And the only way they can do that is if a real fraternity sponsors them. And the only one that they can wind up getting to sponsor them is an all-black fraternity called Lambda Lambda Lambda. They become the Tri-Lambdas.
Do you reckon that's like an LLLKKK joke?
I was trying to
figure out if Lambda 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 was any kind of like reference.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm
probably
not.
I'm just trying to read too much into things.
Oh, no, there's plenty that comes up that is very in line with that, I think. So they decide to impress the Lambdas into accepting them by throwing like a bitchin' party. So like that's what you're supposed to do when you're a frat. You meant to throw a sweet party with girls you can kiss, music you can dance to.
Yeah.
At some point during this, they're trying to like get girls to come. One of them says to Booger, "Do you have a date for the party?" And he says, "I've been out combing the high schools all day."
I will say straight up, this movie treats women very badly. That's an incredibly unwoke aspect of this film.
It does in a number of ways. Actually, I'll dispute that, but only for the upcoming scene. And that is basically the only point at which anything remotely positive is expressed about women in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
And that is... So they're having their party. They're getting ready for the party. And it should be noted, only person who has a party, who has a date for the party is the gay kid. And, like, no one's got a problem with it.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Yeah. They're,
it was just chill.
Yeah, they get the Lambdas there, and the Lambdas are dancing away. Sorry, the Lambdas from the fraternity, the big black dudes in suits, and they're all standing around looking at this very sedate party with no girls.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and yeah, and the only two people dancing are a queer black guy and this other guy that he's got at the party with him. And like, it's not an issue for anyone. No one says anything about it. Nobody makes a face. There's no reference to it, which I was really surprised by.
Yeah, me too. It was only the 80s. Maybe the 80s were more chill.
1984.
Hmm.
And like the only aspect in which it was mentioned was somebody saying, "Bah, he's got a date for the party." Like, as in, I'm jealous that he's got a date.
Mm.
Not like it's a problem or anything.
Good for them.
Yeah,
good
and I was
for
like,
Revenge of the Nerds.
I was like, huh, what do you know? But they wind up managing to have a good party with the help of great big joints. And a whole bunch of girls who arrive from another sorority called the something Moose, a very clever joke.
The Uggo House.
The Uggo House. But look, let's just be real. They all start showing up and they're all just like, they're all just thick. They're all just these big stacked, powerful women.
They are stacked. There's some Amazonian women in there.
Yeah. Yeah, they all come in. They're like a foot taller than these dudes and just fucking... all wearing sweet 80s dresses and everything. Big, thick glasses, just like you want. And everybody gets high and starts plowing booze and having a good party. And the Lambdas are impressed. And it's all going pretty well for them. A bunch of the nerds get to fuck.
They do. The dude loses his virginity.
Yep. Oh, I also wondered about, like, So what's the other... what's the other main nerd's name?
I don't know Lewis. Any of their names.
Lewis with the glasses.
All right.
So he gets to fuck too. And when he's done, the girl comes out doing up her dress and goes to leave. And he comes out a second later wearing like the red velvet dressing gown and smoking a pipe. Like he's suddenly a man. And again, I went, I wonder if this is like the start of that trope.
Yeah, that's a thing. Dudes losing their virginity and then they're wearing a dressing gown and a pipe.
Yeah, suddenly they're a man.
Mm.
Like, and even in things like where I feel like they've done The Simpsons too, where Bart comes out and he's got the dressing gown and he blows like bubbles out of his little pipe.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
All that sort of stuff. And it did make me wonder if this was the first time in pop culture that was a thing. If it was very influential on the nerds of the world, the comedy writing nerds. So the party's gone well for them, and they've all got laid and everything. And then something happens. I'm trying to remember whatever it is that happens that gets them to come out the front of the house. Oh, that's right. The Alpha Beta jocks show up and release a bunch of pigs into their house to make fun of them for having what they think are ugly girls at their party.
Mm.
Which is pranks go. Pretty rough.
Where did they get these pigs? Mm. There's so many pigs.
Yep. They had a lot of pigs. Released them all into their party. Pretty after the fact. Like, I gotta say, I think they were pretty late off the mark with this prank because they already got to have a sweet party and they all like got laid.
It was
and
like the was, end of the party.
Yeah, it was really like winding down. They were just wrapping it up, you know. So, you know, they're all a bit sad about this. And Gilbert, the good looking nerd, is like, no, we have to prank them. We got to prank them and get them back. And Lucy, what's the best way to do a prank on a guy that really sticks it to him?
I don't know. What is the best way, Andrew?
Well, what you do is you break into, the sorority.
Oh, right.
The girls that they know live in. And you drill holes in the wall and put a bunch of secret cameras in and you film these women 24 hours a day in the bathroom and in their bedrooms without their consent.
Yeah. And then you break into their house while they're naked, barge in on them while they're naked, look at all their bits, yell panty raid
Mm-hmm. Steal their panties.
Steal their panties.
Yeah, and boy, that really sticks it to the guys who let the pigs in your house.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I had a bit of trouble drawing a line between those two, other than the very obvious suggestion of, we'll get you back by messing with your property, and by that we mean these women.
Very unwoke. Mm. Unwoke alarm.
Mm. The unwoke klaxon was sounding. It does get worse than that, though, it should be said. Like, straight away after that, when they go back to the house and they turn on their TV and start switching between the cameras and looking at girls, and they're just, like, sitting on the couch, just mainlining this feed of naked adult women 24 hours a day with the 12-year-old with them?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, gay kid comes down in the morning and he's like, oh, are you guys still watching that? And they're like, yes. And he says to the 12-year-old, haven't you had enough? And he's like, no. stop showing this kid this shit. So yeah, apparently the best way to get revenge on jocks is to sexually assault their girlfriends, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to film them without their consent.
This is bullshit. I want Bush. Pan down. Oh! We've got Bush. Oh, wow. We've got Bush.
Again, we're gonna have to give that one a strike, on the wokeness sense.
0 out of 10. Zero out of ten for wokeness on that one. This entire movie.
Mm. Other than partying down with the thick girls, that's about it. It's about all they got going for them in the respecting women stakes of this movie. Oh no, actually, hold on. Gilbert meets a nice nerd girl who is his equal.
Yeah.
And he respectfully courts her throughout the film, I would say. Everybody else, though, is getting into some not great shit. So after this point, they get accepted officially by the Lambda Lambda Lambdas as a result of both throwing a bitchin' party and taking sweet revenge in the form of filming all their girlfriends naked.
Hmm.
And in retaliation for this, the Alpha Betas burn a sign on the lawn of their house that is the like they're all separate letters that make up the word nerds. And again, I could not help but ask myself, is this not a little heavy-handed in its parallels to civil rights issues?
Maybe literally, a little bit.
Literally throwing rocks through their windows and burning signs on their lawns?
I think what they're trying to say is that being a nerd is the same amount of oppression as being black. That's
very
my take.
Very much. They were drawing a lot of the lines a little too solidly for my liking. So they are very, very outraged by this, and they go to have the Alpha Betas disciplined by the official Greek council that manages all the frats and sororities and stuff. Except that one of the members, or the head of that council, is dun 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 the Alpha Betas. So they find out that they can actually win a competition, some kind of competition that's on every year, and the winner gets to be the head of the council. So that sets off a great big montage, just a hefty montage
mm-hmm.
of them doing events, doing all kinds of things. They have like a drunk tricycle race that the nerds win by using science to counteract the effect of alcohol. They do some tug of war kind of stuff that I think they win by using their big brains and tricking the jocks into falling over. Then they have a booth and they're selling pies. They're selling pies and they've got a line around the block, and head jock is like, the fuck is up with that? How are they raising so much money selling pies? Hey, Ogre, go and get me a pie. And he goes and gets a pie and starts mushing it into his face, and it's basically just cream. And he says, it's probably this reason that they're buying the pies. And it turns out that all of the pie tins just have a naked photo of head jock's girlfriend from the sorority in the bottom of them.
Yeah. Great stuff.
Yeah. Yep. So again, they're going to punish this dude by non-consensually taking and distributing naked photos of his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't really get what they're doing to the jock with this one.
Definitely the possessive thing, I'm assuming, because she is a lady and she is property.
It is that she is owned. She's owned by the jock. Mm-hmm. And isn't this just the greatest revenge on him?
Even though she is slightly nicer than nerd guys sometimes.
Like, only occasionally. Well, she's kind of a...
And then she's a bitch.
Well, right at the start, she sets them up for getting, like, hazed and fucked over really bad by the jocks.
Yeah, that's true.
She tells them the time and place to go to this place where they get literally tarred and feathered. So, you know, this
are you saying she deserved it, Andrew?
Well. Well. At this carnival. Now, this is... I'm going to go ahead and label this the most fucked up part of the movie. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
At this carnival, there's a kissing booth. And head jock is wearing a... like, I guess it could be described as a Darth Vader-like costume. And... he's kissing lots of girls. His girlfriend gets mildly mad about some argument they have. Or she's very horny, one or the other. Mm. And she's like, I'll be over in the fun house. And he's like, I'm busy over here kissing bitches. Lewis the nerd, who has been very horny for her throughout the whole movie, though, hears this and goes, I see my chance. She is then in the fun house. And Darth Vader costume comes in. She's like, ooh, let's get it on. Oh, you want to keep your costume on? You freaky bad boy. They then have some sex. And she's like, wow, you never did it to me like that before. And he sits up and pulls off his mask. And it's Lewis.
Mm, just a bit of casual rape.
Because Lewis has raped her.
Yes.
Yes.
Literally, he has just raped this woman.
The hero of the movie
has
done a rape.
At work.
Yes. But look, Lucy, I hear what you're saying. You're saying, hey, he pretended to be somebody else. He gained her consent under false pretenses without revealing his identity. And he had sex with her.
It's just the old switcheroo.
That's rape, you're saying.
I am saying that.
but here's what you haven't considered. He really wanted to have sex with her.
You're right. I had not considered his point of view in this scenario.
He really wanted to have sex with her, and before that point, she was saying no. She was acting like she didn't want to have sex with him. So, A, what else is he meant to do? And B, as the following scene shows us, that's the way to win a girl over.
Oh, Stan. That was wonderful. He did things to me you've never done before.
You're that nerd.
Yeah.
Oh, God, you were wonderful.
Thanks.
Are all nerds as good as you?
Yes.
How come?
Because all jocks think about is sports. All we ever think about is sex.
What's your name?
Yeah.
Because she comes out of there and she's like, whoa. I can't believe how fucking good this dude is at sex.
Yeah.
Because
you just got to lie to her.
Yeah, as we all know, nerds who have been starved of pussy forever will slavishly be very attentive to it rather than jocks who just get the pussy on a plate and are probably bad at it.
He's a nice guy and he cares about her. That's why he raped her.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. He's a nice guy. He's a pussy scientist and I think what the movie makes clear is that he raped her for her own good.
Yeah, that's a great attitude to pass on to children in this film.
Great lesson for teens. So she comes out of there and she's like, whoa, holy shit. Can't believe this dude rocked me like that. Rock me like a hurricane. Now, the carnival continues. I cannot remember what the... Oh, the very final thing is a talent show that night.
Mm, right.
The nerds suddenly become talented. They're suddenly a band, I guess.
Sure.
And they put on a big musical performance. The two main nerds are very clearly channeling Devo with their jumpsuits and their little modular music things. And the black guy does some rapping, some popping and locking, because of course he does.
Because he's black.
The Japanese guy literally hits a gong.
Yep.
Booger wears a jumpsuit, and like Elvis, and has his hair done like Elvis, and plays a guitar. Let's just say everybody fucking loves it. People love it. They go bananas. The nerds are declared the winners. You'd think that would be happily ever after, right?
You would think so.
Especially considering... that once they award the trophy to the nerds and say, you will nominate the head of the Greek council next year, they immediately say, Gilbert, because he's the nice one who hasn't raped anybody. the head jock gets really mad and he says to his girlfriend, hey, I'm super pissed. Let's go to the gym. And she's like, you know what? Maybe not. Have your pin back. Your class pin or whatever the fuck. And he's like, what? What? You must be crazy. And as she's walking off stage, she says, I must be crazy. I'm in love with a nerd. So, yeah. So, she basically got sexually assaulted like 2 hours before that point. And she has now completely switched her stance from, I'm bullying the fuck out of these dudes and doing whatever I can do to help my boyfriend and his jock buddies crush them and get them out of the school, to, oh, this guy went down on me while I didn't know it was him, and now I'm in love.
Yep. And now I'm a good person who cares about these nerds, and I'm not a bitch.
Yep. Now I'm on the good team.
All somehow she needed was a good root.
Oh, that old number. That old chestnut.
Mm.
Wow. It was not a good look, Revenge of the Nerds.
Not a good look.
Yep.
Do better.
So, you know, if there's one lesson we can all take away from it, it's that a single bout of non-consensual sex will make the object of your desires fall in love with you.
Yep. There was also some problematic racism in the film. I will say that.
Well, yeah. Although, like, I guess that kind of thing in general just reminds me of, like, why I fucking hate romantic comedies, the vast majority of them. It's not because they're romantic comedies. Like, it is possible to make a good one, I guess. It's just that the thing that we all know as a romantic comedy, like, 90-something percent of the time revolves around, like, one or both of the lead characters just being fundamentally dishonest with the other person for, like, 90% of the film.
Yeah, and then they make up and it's all happily ever after.
Yeah, one of two things happens. Either, yeah, this person lies to the other, to their love interest, about, like, who they are and what their job is and where they live and all that kind of shit. And then they come clean about it right at the end, and the other person goes, okay. As opposed to, like, who the fuck are you? Who's this person I've been sleeping with? Whatever. What is your real name? What? You know, rather than any of that. And the other one that always happens is that, like, two people fall in love. And, like, they meet each other and they're getting along super well. And they fall in love and they're super on the same page about everything. And they always have to have, like, the third act conflict and resolution, you know?
Mm.
So, someone, it's usually, like, the ex-boyfriend, the shitty person ex-boyfriend of the female character, will, like, pop up to the guy and go, hey, I porked her last night, and this And this dude, rather than being like, gee, I'd better talk to her about this because this slimy guy that she hates who used to abuse her all the time has told me a thing. Should I talk to her about it or should I totally take this person's word for it and cut her out of my life immediately?
It's always the latter.
Yeah. Which always to me begs the question like, if you're not willing to even for a single second talk to this person and try and figure out what's actually going on, how in love are you really?
Yep. But yep. All romantic comedies wouldn't work if someone just spoke to the person. It's always like, oh, I saw her with a guy that could be her brother, but I'm going to assume that she's cheating on me and never speak to her again.
That's it.
Normal stuff.
I'm going to move to the other coast of our country because of this thing.
Exactly.
I hope they don't catch up with me at the airport. So the nerds have won the trophy. They've saved the day. Everybody's very happy. The jocks are fucking furious. The coach is furious. The football coach is very mad. And he's like, you should be out there not taking shit from these nerds. So they go to the nerds' nice frat house and they fucking destroy it. They totally destroy their house. Gilbert is very mad about this and he goes to the football team's homecoming, pep rally thing, whatever they call them.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing some kind of rally. And he shows up at that to chew him out and say, hey, this is bullshit. They toss him in a fountain because he's a fucking nerd. And he still fronts up and he wants to take the microphone off him and say, hey, this is not okay. It's time for this to end. The big black tri-lambdas show up to defend him, look out for him, and he gets to do his speech. And in the course of his speech, he says,
no one's really going to be free until nerd persecution ends.
And again, I was like, persecution? All right. So, just like in real life, the white upper-class university students get saved from persecution by big black dudes.
Yeah. As is the way things go in life.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Everybody then says, yeah, we do want to all be part of one gang. And the cheerleader, the jock's girlfriend, who is now Lewis's girlfriend, due to the, property transferring powers of rape, is also in there with them as they all chant, nerds, 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 but in a positive way.
Yeah.
And the movie ends.
I blame this movie for giving nerds confidence.
Yeah. Pretty much. I think the panty theft and the voyeurism and the non-consensual sex, not a great look.
Lots of very bad views towards women.
Yep.
Very bad.
But on the nerd front, like I said, I was surprised by how inclusive it was in that mm-hmm. sense. There's a Japanese guy and some corny sound effects and jokes about teaching, like booger teaching and poker and shit. But other than that, like, he's just one of the crew. There's a gay black kid who is openly gay and even discusses it in front of like the big,
big scary
head of the tri-lambdas. Yeah, like when they're saying to him, oh, obviously we would never, you know, discriminate against anyone, our fraternity will be open to people of all races and backgrounds, and the gay kid says, and sexual orientations, and like, and no one blinks.
Yeah,
no one hassles him about it at any point. And I think that there is probably only, I feel like there's only one joke in the movie that like directly relates to the gay character, like stereotypes around the gay character, which is mm-hmm. when they're doing like the sports carnival kind of thing, and the nerds have scientifically engineered him a fancy high-tech javelin, which is specifically engineered to go with his quote limp-wristed throwing style. And he flounces along and throws the thing and like annihilates the jocks. But other than like that and the gong thing, I thought that it was like shockingly progressive to see a movie from 1984 where there are like gay and foreign characters and like people of color where their characters are not just like gay or Japanese.
I think the Japanese guy was very focused on him being Asian.
Yeah.
He says something about lobster claws, and then the other character says, "What are lobster claws?"
Yeah, it's
true. Not ideal.
The Asian guy's saying, "What is hair pie?"
Mm-hmm.
And they tell him, and he's like, "Ooh." But yeah, like by and large, I thought the crew itself was pretty inclusive, and yeah, like for the most part, maybe what I'm trying to say is that their character traits weren't all just like a one-to-one of what their stereotype was, if that makes sense.
That's true. Yeah. Apart from literally every woman in the film.
Yeah, the women, not so much. Not so much.
Yeah.
Other than like Gilbert's girlfriend, and that's it.
Yeah. She's not like other girls.
That's true.
Mm.
Unfortunately, I must blame this movie's revolutionary message of nerd inclusion for our current state of nerd culture and things like The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, I will single-handedly blame this film.
Yep. Our current world is entirely dominated by like massive billion-dollar nerd empires. I mean, like, you've only got to look at all of Disney's big enterprises of the Star Wars, the whole Star Wars franchise now, and the whole Marvel property, and DC sadly trying to keep up with their fucking terrible movies. I keep trying to watch Justice League, and it's not happening.
Mm, it's no good.
I feel like I've had half a dozen runs at picking that movie up from the last spot I fell asleep in it. And I watched it again recently because I was like, I still don't even know how this movie ends. And I was watching it and I was like, oh no, I have seen it. I've just completely forgotten it.
We've all been there.
Yep. It's just, it's no good. But yeah, I think overall, I will say that I think the net effect of this movie has been bad for the world.
I will say that also. I will also say there is a much better version of this film.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty much the same storyline. It's called The House Bunny, starring Scary Movie's Anna Faris and Emma Stone.
God, she's good.
It's essentially the same thing, except Anna Faris grew up in the Playboy Mansion and she gets kicked out because she's too old. So she goes to be the house mother for the nerdy, ugly girl sorority. And then they're going to lose their house, and she fixes everything, and it's very funny. I mean, to me, I don't have amazing taste in film comedies, but I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, well, I guess like the sort of flip side of that one is that she's someone like cool or sexy or whatever coming into a nerd house and helping them transform it, helping them to become cool.
Yes.
But I guess they probably all find out that the coolest thing is to just be yourself.
They do. They do find that out in the end.
Yeah. And also learn to put on a bit of makeup.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. They have a happy medium. They become the hot girls and then they realize that it's bad. And then they take off a little bit of that makeup and everything's perfect.
Yeah. Just
spoilers.
Just a natural look. That's all you're going for.
Yeah.
Well, as long as there's no like, fall in love by doing a rape message, then it is doing better automatically.
Yep.
Automatically doing better than Revenge of the Nerds. It's pretty hard to overlook those several moments, really. And it's not even of the same vibe as like however many other movies there have been where people get super hammered at a party at a college or whatever, and they like wake up and roll over and go, whoa, at like an ugly person or a fat lady or an old woman or whatever, you know? Because at the very least, that's giving the impression of this person got so hammered that they had sex with someone they wouldn't normally have sex with. And that's still not on the same level as, I just wore a mask and let you think that I was your boyfriend. Yeah. While I fucked you.
It's very bad.
Yep. Yep. And it's a shame as well, because like other than that, like that character, Lewis, is like a reasonable, you know, charismatic, fairly warm person. It's just anything that involves a woman, he's just like, gotta see those panties.
Yeah. It's very bad.
Gotta film you through your roof.
Ooh. Ooh, I'm tugging on my collar right now.
So, I don't know. Are we gonna establish any kind of grading system for these?
I don't know. We should have a grading system.
Yeah, I feel like there should be a sliding scale, you know, like from
zero to N-word.
Yeah, from zero to N-word. I feel like this one's kind of in the middle for me.
Yeah, it's got good things, bad things.
Yeah, I feel like the general vibe of like a lot of the characters actually having a character rather than just being their stereotype was good. I feel like the crew was very inclusive, which was good. I feel like all the sexual assault and the rape, bad. I'm just going to say it, bad.
Overwhelmingly bad.
Yep. So I feel like, and that's even with taking the age of the film into account, I think.
Yeah.
Makes me think of another movie called Zapped. A movie from the 80s called Zapped, starring...
I haven't seen that.
Starring big-time Trump-loving dickhead now, Scott Baio, when he was a teen star. And he has some kind... Like, he's meant to be, like, a teenage genius or whatever, and he does some shit to himself in a lab, and he basically gives himself, like, telekinetic powers. And he just uses them to just blow women's clothes off right in front of him.
Oh, cool.
It's basically the... you know, in Extras, where like... Ricky Gervais is talking to Patrick Stewart, and Patrick Stewart's telling him about his idea for a movie or a show or whatever, and the whole thing is him just saying, oh, I'm just looking at a woman, and then her skirt just flies up.
Yes, exactly.
And she tries to put it back down, but it's too late. I've already seen everything. That's basically this entire movie.
Yep.
Yeah, with Scott Baio just blasting women's skirts off.
There's also a better 80s nerd film, John Hughes' Weird Science, where the nerds make a super hot robot lady.
That's true.
Still also problematic. LeBrock. Yes. Very beautiful lady. Still problematic, but a better film, in my opinion.
She was married to Steven Seagal at one point.
Was she?
She was. She appeared in my favorite Steven Seagal film, Hard to Kill.
Mm-hmm.
In which... that's got some problematic shit in it, too. where Steven Seagal... gets like somebody attempts to murder him and he's in a coma. He goes into a coma and he wakes up from his coma like 7 or 8 years later. And Kelly LeBrock is like the hot doctor at the coma center. And she like comes along every day and talks to him in his sleep and stuff because he's so handsome. And then she just like lifts up his sheet and looks at his dick while he's sleeping.
Okay.
And it's very weird. He grows like a big Chinese beard while he's in. I would like to do Weird Science, actually, because
I would.
There's a lot of very weird shit in that movie as
well. There is some super problematic shit in that movie.
It's very strange. So maybe that would be a worthwhile one. I think we should also take nominations, obviously. So since this is a bonus episode, please, beautiful patrons, get on the comments. Make some nominations if there are movies you would like us to check out. We did this one because someone suggested it.
Mm-hmm. We'll do whatever you want.
That's right. So throw it out there. We'll check it out. And maybe if there's a handful of options that we think are good, maybe we'll just do a poll.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a poll. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me, Andrew.
All right. Well, we better leave it there then. But that is the second ever installment of If It Ain't Woke, Don't Fix It.
Do fix it. Was not woke.
Do better, you huge fucking
do
nerds.
Better.
Stop. Bad. Bad notes. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.